I've actually won an award as God. When I used to be an actor, I was in a show called, a play called Everyman, and I played God. And I won an award. So all my life, I have dreamed of being that voice that comes out of the burning bush. Moses! But I have never been invited. But in case that it's been a while since you've seen Charlton Heston and the Ten Commandments, or maybe it's been a while since you've seen DreamWorks, The Prince of Egypt, or maybe you're kind of fuzzy on the details of this story, or maybe you don't know the story at all, I want to quickly give a little bit of background to Exodus 3. At the beginning of Exodus, the Hebrew people are enslaved and oppressed by the Egyptians. And the Egyptians fear that the Hebrew people are going to kind of rise up and rebel. So Pharaoh, the leader, declares that all Egyptian babies, all Israeli, all Israelite Hebrew babies, be thrown into the Nile and drowned. Nice guy, huh? Well, Moses was one of those babies to be thrown into the Nile and drowned. And his mother came up with a creative idea to save her life. She made this raft out of reeds and placed baby Moses in the raft of reeds and set him in the Nile. And the raft floated downstream and was found by one of the Pharaoh's daughters, who took Moses in as her own. So here this Hebrew slave child was raised in the Egyptian household. Moses had this dual identity. He was born Hebrew, but raised an Egyptian. Brian McLaren says in the book, in the chapter for this week, he says, we're all like Moses in a way. You know, there comes a time where we have to decide, who will we become? Where we have to decide, which side will we stand on? Well, there came a time where young man Moses, there came a time for such a decision where he witnessed a Hebrew slave being brutally attacked by an Egyptian. And Moses reacted and ended up killing the Egyptian. So he had to flee Egypt. And he found himself in this oasis in the desert. And there what he witnessed were some young girls being driven away from the well by shepherds. Now, interesting, Moses stood up for these young girls. He stood up, and there seems to be this pattern in Moses of justice, this pattern of standing up for the oppressed. Well, the father of one of the girls was so grateful, Jethro, he welcomed Moses into the family. And Moses ended up marrying one of his daughters, one of the girls he protected at the well named Zipporah. They actually had a son named Gershom, which means stranger. Interesting. However, Moses took on the job of tending the sheep of his father-in-law, Jethro. And there he is out there minding his own business, doing what he does day in, day out, trying to keep those pesky little sheep in line. And he notices something bizarre, weird, unusual. A bush is on fire. So he stops, drops, rolls. I love that. He hears out of that bush a voice that says, "You are the one to lead my people into freedom." Because we go back to Exodus 2, as our prayer is highlighted, what led to this encounter was Exodus 2. It says God observed their suffering. God heard their cries. And God chose Moses to be the one. So as we hear this ancient story from Exodus 3, I invite you to be curious of how your story intersects with this story. To be curious, perhaps, how through this story, God might be calling you.
Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then God said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppressed them. So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" He said, "I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." He said further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations.'"
What's your burning bush? Now, I suspect that we all have these images, these experiences, these passions, these longings, these callings that tug at us and never leave us, that don't get burned up but stay. Now, I'm sure that we all have passions that burn intensely for a season of time, but then leave. But I'm wondering if all of us have a burning bush or two burning in our souls. We might try to distract ourselves, pretend it's not there, ignore it, but it persists. What's intriguing about the story to me is Moses encountered a burning bush. Now, I'm told that because of the intensity of the heat of the desert, it actually wasn't a miracle that this bush was on fire. That would happen from time to time, that a bush would just internally combust. What got his attention was this bush was on fire and it wasn't consumed. And from this bush he heard the call upon his life to lead the Hebrew people to freedom. So what's your burning bush? When we lived in Australia, my wife Lori was the director of an intercountry adoption agency, which meant we traveled throughout Southeast Asia. We visited orphanages in the most poverty-stricken places you can imagine on the face of the earth. One of these places was in Nong Khai in Thailand on the Laotian border. It was an orphanage. It was one of these orphanages where there were 30 cribs lined up in a room with no stimulation at all. And there was a 6-year-old boy, I don't know how, but was convinced that we had come to bring him home. So when it came time to leave, we were walking away and he was sitting on the steps. And I turned, and there was one solitary tear slowly rolling down his cheek. That tear is seared into my soul and burns as intensely today as it did 20 years ago. Jesus said in the Gospel of John, "I will not leave you as orphans." My calling is that people might experience and know themselves as beloved, especially the spiritually homeless might experience a home in God's unconditional love. That tear, that single tear, is my burning bush. Sure, I get distracted. I get busy. I mindlessly spend my days tending my pesky sheep. Not you. Just to clarify. But if you feel convicted. So it's so easy to get distracted. Because really, if we dare to take the time to pay attention to the burning bush in all of our souls, the burning bush that burns in all of our souls, if we actually dare to stop and to listen and to pay attention, we know ourselves to be called to respond. It takes a lot of courage to listen to the things you care passionately about. It takes a lot of courage to really pay attention to the things that you feel called to love in this world. Because to pay attention to our burning bushes is to love. And to love in this world is risky and vulnerable. So I'm wondering if that's the whole point, where God says to Moses, "Remove your sandals, for the ground you're walking on is holy." I hate my feet. Anybody else hate their feet? I have the ugliest feet in the world. I kid you not. I just have really ugly feet. And I don't like my feet, and I don't like exposing my feet. I don't like going barefoot. I don't like showing other people my feet. When I show people my feet, like, I would love to wear flip-flops, but what keeps me from wearing flip-flops is I hate my feet. And to show people my feet is to feel exposed. I didn't say it was rational. Is to be vulnerable. I remember many, many years ago, I was part of a retreat, and in the evenings we had devotions around the campfire, and the leader said, "Pair up with somebody and wash each other's feet." Are you kidding me? You know, I don't want to show anyone my feet, let alone see anybody else's feet and touch them. And wouldn't you know it, the person that I was paired with had this uncanny ability to irritate the heck out of me with everything that came out of her mouth. Again, this was many, many years ago. So wait a minute. I had to hold, touch, see, wash her feet. I had to let her hold, touch, see, wash my dirty, ugly, smelly feet. Ugh. It was uncomfortable, vulnerable, because I'm an expert at keeping a distance. I'm an expert at wearing the mask of self-sufficiency. I have it all together. But I was being asked to take my shoes and socks off. And I did it. And as we awkwardly, and it was awkward, as we awkwardly held each other's feet, something powerful shifted in me. Something that made me wonder whether that's the whole point. To be uncomfortable, to be vulnerable. I don't think I've rarely, if ever, felt so seen and connected. And this was a person I thought I didn't like. To feel so seen and connected to another person and to God. God says to Moses, take off your sandals, for the place you're walking on is holy ground. God, what's with feet? What's with the obsession with feet? Come on, there's got to be something else but feet. You know, I wondered to myself, is it because of reverence and respect? Because in the ancient world, you took your shoes off when you went into a sacred place. Maybe it was a place of home, because in the ancient world, you took your shoes off to enter your own home. In Exodus 2, Moses says, I'm an alien in a foreign land. He wasn't welcomed by the Egyptians because he was raised Egyptian. He wasn't welcomed by his own people. Maybe it's there in the presence of God where he felt home. And maybe it's in the presence of God and feeling home that we find the courage to live the life we're called to live. But I think there's more to this whole barefoot business. It must have been incredibly weird for Moses to go closer to the burning bush and to toss off his sandals. To feel the sand and the pebbles and the prickly brush poke the sensitive, weary, dirty part of his skin. To feel the heat of the bush singeing his toes. Now, to keep his sandals on, he could have kept a distance. Safe, protected, unaffected, ready to run. But he was asked to take his sandals off. To feel the ground beneath his feet. To know where he is. To be where he is. To be in the presence of God. And this holy, barefoot vulnerability meant that Moses was all in. He wasn't a passive spectator to this spectacular event. He was a participant. He was part of it. He was in it. So it makes me wonder that maybe God didn't ask Moses to take his sandals off because the ground is holy. Maybe it's when Moses took his sandals off, became vulnerable, all in, the ground became holy. You know, this is so opposite to the way our culture teaches us to be. Our culture teaches us that vulnerability is weakness. Weakness is bad. Our culture teaches us to embody strength through invincibility, self-protection, this illusion of security, disconnectedness. God points to another way. You know, Jesus, we believe the mystery that Jesus revealed God's love, that God's love somehow was present, embodied, incarnate in Jesus. Jesus, born crying, a baby vulnerable in a dangerous and oppressive land. Jesus, risking his own life to call out injustice, to stand with those on the margins. Jesus, rather than taking on the role that others wanted him to take on of the mighty conquering hero, love your enemies. Jesus showing us what love really looks like by taking the weary, cracked, worn, tired, dirty, smelly, ugly feet of his followers and holding them tenderly and washing them. Jesus from the cross, rather than speaking revenge, spoke forgiveness. Jesus trembling on the cross, bearing his soul, his pain, his doubts, for all the world to see. This is the one we call the way, the truth, the life. The way and the life of this one is the way of vulnerability. You know, our culture, its divisiveness, its disconnectedness, its self-protection, its illusion of security, its arrogance, its invincibility. It isn't working. All of that is not making the world safer, better, holier. I am convinced that we cannot strong arm our way out of this mess. And that God doesn't want us to. In the wake of Robin Williams' suicide and bringing to light the epidemic of mental illness, in the wake of the continued unrest, racial unrest in Ferguson, in the wake of the 75th school shooting since Newtown, in the wake of this out of control fear around Ebola, and many politicians pointing fingers, flexing, fear-mongering, Brené Brown, who studies and writes on vulnerability, wrote in her blog, "We have two choices. We can choose fear or courage. To choose fear requires us to arm ourselves with self-righteousness and judgment. There's another choice, and that's the choice of courage. It's not to deny our vulnerability. It's to lean in to the beauty and agony of our shared humanity." And she writes, "To choose courage is not to be unafraid. It's to be brave enough to love despite the fear and uncertainty. To choose courage is not to be unafraid. It's to be brave enough to love despite it all." That's why we need to come together. That's why we need to gather. I need your help to choose courage. Because every single day I'm tempted to choose otherwise. I need your help to choose the path of vulnerability. The world's on fire. And it seems to me right now that the whole world is one big, giant, burning bush. And God is calling us out of the flames. And God is saying, no longer can we pretend and ignore and mindlessly tend to our sheep. We need to remove our sandals to feel the pebbles on our weary, dirty, sensitive skin, to be awakened to where we are, awakened to what is, awakened to each other, awakened to the presence of God, and then to listen, really, really, really listen to the burning bush in our own souls and go where we are called. Moses said, "Who am I?" God didn't answer. God said, "I'll be with you. I don't require your qualifications. All I ask is for the vulnerability of your heart. All I ask is that you might choose courage to love, despite the fear, despite the uncertainty. And maybe then we will all discover that the ground we are walking on is holy ground." We continue to worship God as the offering is received.